Good morning, everybody. We're glad you could join us today here on Power Talk 1210, Solomon on Blast, where we take the wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of King Solomon and use it to understand the confused culture we live in today. A reminder, the shows are available on the website, SolomonOnBlast.com. We have Solomon's blog post there, which we'll be updating as we're inspired to do so. So check things out. Let us know what you think. You want to email us, Solomon@SolomonOnBlast.com. Solomon's wisdom helps us identify all the different types of people that existed in the world, at least back then when Solomon lived. And because, as he always says, there's nothing new under the sun, those people continue to exist in the world today. He points out that there are the wise, which is what we strive to be, and hopefully you do also. There are the simple and the foolish, which we don't want to be. And then he points out that there are wicked and evil people, which we definitely don't want to be or be associated with. The problem is you can't ignore the fact that the wicked and evil people do exist and have existed for as long as humanity's existed. We talked a little bit last week about looking back at 1915 to kind of get an idea of what was going on in what might be going on in 2015. Well, one of the stories that I didn't cover that I had actually had looked at and just didn't have the time to cover, I thought I'd take a quick look at it. And the headline was German destruction of factories in Canada and the United States begins. Germany had mobilized an immense army of spies, dynamiters, assassins, and conspirators in the United States at the outbreak of war in Europe. Now, this is back 100 years ago, 1915. These assassins hesitated at no crime that might in the least degree advance the cause of the fatherland or Germany. The head center of these conspiracies was a German legation at Washington, and the mastermind that directed it was Count Johann von Bernstorff, the German ambassador. And they had actually put together a large group of, like I said, assassins and saboteurs. They were especially active in the attempted destruction of munition factories, workshops, camps, and most important centers of military and civil supply in the United States. And so they incited a lot of labor troubles throughout America. They specialized in sabotage of machine shops, destruction of vessels that carried war material to the Allies. In order to recruit their criminal agents, they established a German employment bureau in New York so that they could actually bring these people in and hire them. Typical plots were blow up the factory of one Peabody Company in Ontario. So this was happening, like I said, both in U.S. and Canada. Windsor Armories in Ontario. Plants in throughout different areas of Canada. And to blow up the Detroit Screw Works, where shrapnel was being manufactured, to destroy the St. Clair Tunnel. Now, having grown up there, I know exactly what that is. There's a tunnel between Detroit and Canada that goes under the St. Clair River there. So that tunnel was one of the ones that they had looked to destroy. And actually, one of the destructions that they did manage to accomplish was an incident that was referred to as Black Tom, because it was this occurred at the Black Tom Pier. And what happened was the pier was laden with 1,000 tons of munitions that was destined for Britain, France, and Russia in order to help the war against Germany. It supposedly suddenly caught fire and exploded with a force that scarred the Statue of Liberty with shrapnel, shattered windows in Times Square, rocked the Brooklyn Bridge, and woke sleepers as far away as Maryland. So this all was going on in 1915, and I wonder, are we seeing a very, very similar thing with regards to what happened this past week and the attacks that are occurring, and as we'll see in the upcoming story, some of the things that are being said about those same attacks coming to the United States. We'll be back with more of Solomon on Blast. We're back with Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. In Proverbs, Solomon says, "He who pursues evil pursues it to his own death. Though they join forces, the wicked will not go unpunished." Well, it's been a pretty dramatic week this past week with the attacks in Paris. And according to this particular article that came out actually yesterday, ISIS is bragging that they were part of the terrorist attack, and they're warning that Britain and the United States are next. Now, we talked a little bit about what was happening in 19...
and be sensitive, and obviously not everybody who calls himself a Muslim is supportive of this. That's obvious. But, like I said, go back. This guy said this in a sermon in a mosque.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't just simply write this in an underground newspaper. This is the forum. The forum is religious. It is a worship service, quote unquote. And how can you separate these two ideas, and how can you properly identify where it's coming from unless you're willing to call it out?
And I don't think you can. It's obvious that those guys were specifically targeted in Paris because of the fact that they had blasphemed the Prophet Muhammad, right? And then their religion, in their belief system, that deserves the death. And so it is absolutely based on their ideology, and you can't get around it. I think part of the problem that the liberals and the people that put these cartoons out in these newspapers have is they're atheists for the most part. They don't see it in that manner. They see it as, okay, these guys are just radical goofballs. Let's just make a lot of fun of them. And they didn't limit themselves to the Muslims, obviously.
Well, any stretch.
You know, right.
They would just assume the Christians, because Christians are soft targets and they won't get much of a response. They might get an editorial or a statement somewhere, or mentioned in somebody's book or column. But that's all pretty much you're going to get. You know, in fact, I don't have it in front of me, so I won't try to quote it, but that was a great article this week where someone pointed out that if you really look at what Charlie Hebdo, that's what it looks like to me,
right,
is all about, I mean, some of their stuff is downright vile.
Absolutely.
It's not even, you know, it's not praiseworthy in any context.
Right.
Other than we realize this is an attack against free speech, trying to somehow elevate these people as if they represented what was good about free speech is really a dilemma. And so, you know, a lot of ways they draw this kind of attention. But, you know, when you're from the civilized concepts that really have ruled the West for centuries, is that you just, what did Jesus say? You turn the other cheek, you just ignore them, you blow them off. You say, you know, Larry Flint's come and Larry Flint's go, so whatever. But they don't have the ability to do that. But there is a danger here. It's kind of like equating Michael Brown with Martin Luther King, you know, what's been going on, you know, with the whole protest in Ferguson. I mean, there's a huge difference, but they don't even belong in the same library in terms of who they were. But because when they start coupling these issues together, all this stuff gets blurry, you know.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and continue the discussion, because I don't think we're done yet. And if you want to weigh in, give us a call. Okay, we're back. Solomon on Blast here. And before the break, we said we were talking about, you know, the viewpoints of these people. Both the attackers and those that got attacked, the ones that got attacked, really, they feel that they have a freedom of press. And in France, obviously, they had that luxury. Although, if you look back in the history on this particular newspaper, they were under a different name previously and actually had been shut down for putting out cartoons that were well beyond, I guess, what people would accept. So they shut them down, and then they revamped themselves and came back as Charlie Herdaut, or however you want to pronounce it, and have been doing this. The problem is they like the fact that they've got freedom of press, but they didn't have the essential piece of that, which was the Second Amendment, which is the right to keep and bear arms, because they had no way to protect themselves against these guys. So if you haven't got that, you really don't have freedom of the press, and these guys pretty much made a point of it.
That's a very interesting point you're making, because you want to also add to that freedom of assembly, you know, right to bear arms, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, and all of these freedoms really do link together to create a united front against
tyranny
and those that would right. would try to shut you down. And when you only have one of those pieces, you're actually kind of playing with freedom.
You're playing with fire at that point in time. If you don't have all of them, I think you're deceived in believing that your freedom of expression, the freedom of the press, is going to protect you. There's nothing there that's going to protect you. The state obviously couldn't protect these guys. They had police officers there.
Did you see the image of the police officer kind of begging for his life?
No, I didn't actually watch it. I
couldn't resist looking at it. And it really happened so quick. It's very unlike the movies, of course.
Mm-hmm.
They're moving fast, and this man is wounded. He's on the sidewalk, and he kind of lifts his hand like, please. And the guy just shoots him in the head on the way by, almost incidentally. Like, you know, I've got other things to worry about.
Uh-huh.
It was so tragic, is you see a police officer with no weapon.
Right.
Who cannot, not only can he not defend anybody else, he can't even defend himself, and he can't even put up a fight. And, you know, when you consider that against everything we're going through right now in America, and you ask yourself, is this what we want for our police here? Do we want to disarm them to the point where they can't even defend themselves?
Right. The only real advantage is after the fact, they can go out and try and find these guys, then arm themselves, get ready, and go stop them, kill them, like they did manage to do. But at the point in time when it's most critical, there's nothing there if you haven't got that freedom to be able to defend yourself. And I think the liberals lose that concept in their minds that all I need is the freedom of the press, and I can say whatever I want, even though they had been attacked before, and obviously they had police there just because of that.
They forget how dangerous the world really is. And, you know, you right. have to be vigilant about freedom on every front, like you're pointing out. Actually, it's a brilliant observation to bring the Second Amendment into this, but it's very much part of it. It is part and partial.
Right. And I think your statement that they have to be linked together is what the point I was trying to make. You can't have one without the other. You can't have, you know, a door without a lock on it isn't going to do you any good, just having the door there. And that's basically what they're trying to do, is say, hey, I've got freedom of expression. I've got my door to protect me. Well, if you haven't got the lock on it, nothing's going to protect you. And really, the thing that they forget is that the Muslims do believe in a heaven and a hell. And these atheists don't. And so the Muslims, in their belief system, believe that they need to destroy anybody that's going to blaspheme the name of their prophet Muhammad. So they believe there is a consequence for what these cartoonists did, and they were more than willing to make sure that their belief system took I guess, priority over the atheist non-belief system.
Right. They're saying you want freedom of speech. Well, you know, like they basically go in with automatic weapons and say, you know, speak freely now. You know, it's crude, and that's kind of the way, you know, I'm really making that as soft as I can. But that's the idea. It's like, where do you think all this freedom comes from? Who supports it? Freedom, like anything else, has to be paid for, right?
Right.
It's going to be paid for. Who's paying the tab on your freedom? And, you know, at what point do you simply say, I'm giving my freedom away in order to be not be abused or violated?
Yeah, and it really doesn't matter whether the police did catch the murderers or not. It matters, I think, more so that they look at, going forward, what they allow with regards to either freedom of expression or the right to keep and bear arms.
This reminds me of that famous Orwell comment where he said people are able to sleep peaceably in their beds at night because rough men stand ready to do violence on their behalf.
Yeah. A good friend of mine always says, did any bombs fall in your backyard today?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And you say, because... no. And he says, you're welcome. Why? Because he's part of the United States Air Force, Air National Guard. And
absolutely.
Remind you, hey, things aren't blowing up in your backyard, and there's a reason why.
So maybe we can learn a lesson from this, that in spite of all of our challenges and troubles and some, you know, and some political realities behind having to keep the peace in America, that we do need an empowered police force.
Absolutely.
We're ready to
and maybe France
stand
will
up.
Reconsider, because I think what these terrorists have basically said is, you think you've got the freedom of the press. Their response was, my AK-47 says that you don't.
Exactly.
And so we'll come back with our next story after this break. Give us a call. We're back. Solomon on Blast. When you sit down to eat with a ruler, Solomon says, consider carefully what is before you, and put a knife to your throat if you're a man given to appetite. Do not desire his delicacies, for they are deceptive food. Well, why would I say that? Well, according to a Reuters article, and this came out yesterday, Obama proposes the idea of 2 years free community college for everybody that qualifies. Now, according to the article that came out, and my computer froze up, so I can see nothing. He wants to make 2 years of community college free and universally available. And this was his proposal that he's going to bring the details out in his State of the Union speech later this month. White House officials... Here's the funny part about, or not funny, but just kind of contradictory part about this, why it irritated me so much. Remember the title of the article, Obama proposes idea of 2 free years of community college. White House officials acknowledged the plan would come with a significant price tag, but declined to disclose projected costs, saying those details would come out in his budget on February 2nd. Put simply, what I'd like to do is see the first 2 years of community college be free for everybody who's willing to work for it, Obama said. And the idea would require the Republican-controlled Congress to pass legislation so that the federal government could pay for 75% of the tuition, with participating state governments having to pick up the rest of the tab. So obviously it's not quite free.
Yeah, it's not quite free. And, you know, the first thing that comes to mind with me is, remember free health care?
Yes.
They actually had that on the government website up until the day or the week they rolled it out.
Where it was no longer free?
It was no longer free, so they had to take that off because they knew that that wasn't ever true. And then, you know, but by that time it was too late. It had already been passed. The Supreme Court had already adjudicated, and it didn't matter what the truth was anymore. They had the power over the situation. What I'm saying is free tuition is not true. And so this is my parallel. Just like healthcare already had Medicare in place, there were indigent health funds in place in various places, counties, states, and whatnot, that what Obamacare actually did was move into an area that was already being attended to in another way, probably a far superior way, and that was not good at the time, but far superior to what's here now.
Right.
So to cut to the chase, Doug, eventually this is simply going to be another burden placed squarely on the shoulders of the middle class. Everyday people who work for a living are going to have to pay that tab. So today you can get Pell Grants. There's different kinds of scholarships available. And a kid that applies themselves to that can find different ways to fund their college, at least defray lots of the costs. So to say that now he's the guy on the white horse that's going to come along, finally give people an opportunity to get a cheaper education, it's completely bogus. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying it's the same lie.
In a different
gone
package.
From healthcare, now into education. And the only thing I can recommend for Obama to do about this is make sure he hires Jonathan Gruber. And I'm sure he'll make sure all these dumb Americans buy the idea.
Well, yeah, I think from the aspect of the fact that it's being touted as free, and that's the headline that the White House put out there, that's as far as anybody's really going to go in terms of pursuing the article. Most people, oh, good, I can get free college tuition now. Okay. And they're not going to read the article beyond that. And like I said, they acknowledge it would come at a significant price tag, but they won't tell you what that cost is. And even if they don't tax the middle class, which is where a majority of the taxes come from, or if they don't tax anybody, that means that they're going to have to continue to do what they've been doing, which is just create money out of thin air to pay for these things, which eventually leads to more debt in this country, and somebody's going to have to pay for it. There is no free lunch. So that's really my viewpoint on it, is there is no free lunch, and to come out with this kind of thing and say, this is how we're going to solve the problem, isn't going to work. The other aspect of it that I was thinking about was there's already, like you said, all kinds of grants, student loans, everything else available at the university level. And what has that done for those areas other than continue to raise the cost of tuition? Because most of these universities look at it and say, well, these kids can get grants and student loans and everything else. So they're not really paying for it. We'll increase the cost of tuition. And it's just continued to skyrocket. Now, the numbers that they're saying for this particular plan with the community colleges, it'll save people about $3,800 a year. Wow, that's really a lot. We're talking 10 bucks a day, basically.
And you're raising a good point here. So let's just say that this was, in a perfect world, really able to happen, and they were really able to give a free education for the first 2 years, more or less. What would that do to the universities? Talking about having to raise tuition now, they would really have to bump it up.
Now they're going to have competition with the community colleges.
How are they going to make up for those people who wisely choose to get the first 2 years at a community college? I'll tell you, one is they're going to have to bump up tuition, and number two, they're going to make it way more difficult to get into their school. They're going to make it way more proprietary.
Right? Yeah, the numbers...
And specific in terms of the classes they require. So lots of those people are going to have to go to the university and get classes that they thought that previously they could have gotten at the
at a
community
much cheaper
college.
Cost. Yeah, and
so they're going to make sure they get their money back one way or another.
Yeah, it says the proposal requires everyone to do their part. Community colleges must strengthen their programs and increase the number of students who graduate, i.e., going to cost them more money. States must invest more in higher education and training. And students must take responsibility for their education, earn good grades, and stay on track to graduate, are the kind of the program's initial guidelines here. But what I find interesting is they're basing this whole concept on the fact that a century ago, they must have stole my idea from last week, they're looking back a century ago and stating that there was a movement that made high school widely available 100 years ago, and that movement is what led to the rapid growth of our country's technology and economic growth, because of the fact that they made high school effectively free to everybody, so everybody could get a high school education. Well, my question to that would be, if high school is available and everybody's got what they need there, why do they think they have to continue it into community college, other than the fact that nobody's getting educated in high school, so maybe we can educate them in the community college level.
Well, there's also a false assumption associated with that metaphor, and that is that education has not been available to the masses of America, numbers of America. And in fact, you really want to look at it, you'll find out that there's lots of college-educated people don't have jobs, can't get a job, can't get anything in their field. So we're highly saturated in that area. It's not like there's a lack of it.
Right. Well, to kind of respond to that, the statement in the article and the press release is that they're looking at people that don't want to go to a college, a university, and a four-year degree, that want to be able to get a two-year degree in the technical or the, you know, the more of a industrial environment so that they can bring manufacturing back to the United States. So they're looking at those that have no inclination to go to the university and get a four-year degree. You can get educated, and then you can go out and get that good job as a welder or Joe the plumber or whatever it is that typically people go to two-year degrees for. So he's trying to focus it more towards the aspect that not everybody can or wants to go to a four-year degree. Although part of this is colleges, these community colleges have to make sure any classes that they provide to these students do transfer over to the university level. Otherwise, you know, they're not going to get paid for it.
Right. And as I pointed out earlier, I think that's going to become a great challenge, because these universities are going to have to recoup one way or another.
Yeah, somewhere that money's going to have to show up for them to be able to pay professors, teachers more, upgrade facilities so that the universities will accept these things. So it's interesting. We'll see what happens when he brings it out in the State of the Union speech. I guess this was kind of a preview, a trailer for his State of the Union speech, I guess maybe to get the college kids to support him as he provides this stuff. So we'll come back after this break with more Solomon on Brett. Solomon on Blast. Okay, we're back. Solomon on Blast. Proverbs 19:1, Solomon says, "Better is the poor who walks in his integrity than one who is perverse in his lips and is a fool." Why? Well, according to this article from the Boston Globe, 64 Dartmouth College students faced discipline over cheating. Now, I think this kind of flows right in from what we were talking about with regards to the whole Obama providing free college there. But these students, including some athletes, could face suspension or other disciplinary action for cheating. And get this, in an ethics class in this past fall, they said the students implicated in the cheating scandal misrepresented their attendance and participation in the undergraduate course Sports, Ethics, and Religion. The class used electronic handheld clickers registered to individual students to answer in-class questions. Officials at the college said the students charged with cheating either gave their clickers to classmates instead of attending class themselves, or helped others cheat by using the clickers to answer questions on their behalf. Now, is this what happens when you get free education, Fred, from the college people?
Actually, as you're reading this, I'm thinking, man, this should be part two of Obama's education rollout plan and guarantee passing grades along with free tuition.
So instead of having to actually go to school, you just could buy your grades.
Absolutely, or you don't even have to buy them. You know, the government's going to do that for you, and that way you can just go straight to work. Why waste your time at all? You know, it's kind of funny because this has to do with ethics and religion and all those other deep philosophical questions. But you know, it's funny also because this is Dartmouth. If there's any area of the country you would think that would be above this, it would be the Ivy League. You know, every time I see one of their teams, I was telling you, play in whatever, you rarely see it, but you see them perform like Harvard or whatever. Right. Your assumption is that these guys just throw the ball around a little bit between homework assignments, but I guess it's not. I guess some of these guys are like everybody else. They're just trying to get by, huh?
Yeah, and trying to make it through. And according to the article, this professor had actually set this class up so that there was easier way for these athletes coming in at the entry level to be able to have success in their college life, I guess, yeah. in terms of the class. Something that they would actually be able to pass. But I guess that didn't work out. And it was, like the article says, it was to appeal to the interest of student athletes who made up a sizable portion of that class, which I guess if it's sports ethics.
Yeah, you're trying to compete a little bit, so you got to get some people in these universities like, you know, but for example, that's what makes this, a good Stanford team so impressive is we're assuming they have these academic standards that they have to hold to as, you know, as well as being a competitive program like football program or basketball program, but makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah. And the part that kind of caught my eye and made me think was that, you know, it's always ethics training. Everybody's got to have ethics. Whatever happened to morality? Yeah. If you have morality, I don't think there's really the need for the ethics side of things in life because you've already got a foundation through the morality. And where's that morality going to come from? It's going to come from your religious upbringing. But in a world that seems very much anti-religion and wants to let everybody do their own thing, you've got to have something to replace that morality foundation. And so we try and do it by having everybody take ethics training instead.
Yeah, and I guess in really if you even go in behind what that's all about, it's questioning ethics as to what really is ethics is what they're right. really asking. So in a way, they're kind of fulfilling the grayness of that whole approach. That it's like Pilate's question, what is truth? You know, they're really asking, what are ethics? Do they even exist? And what your ethics might be may not be mine. And you, right. so in reality, this actually they should all get an A for
passing the class.
Yeah, and exploring the boundaries of that kind of thinking.
Right, they were actually discussing ethics.
Yeah. What is and what is not ethical. To them, this is ethical.
Right. I can use somebody else's clicker. I can pass the class. And that's my view of things, so why not?
It reminds me of an article I read a few years ago asking the question, was George Washington really not that smart for always telling the truth? And they compared him to Bill Clinton, who Bill Clinton realized, and you know, obviously a very pro Clinton position, that the reason people like Clinton have to lie the way they do is because they realize society is very complex and there's all these other factors in play. And is it that people like George Washington just weren't smart enough to get what Clinton gets? I mean, it's kind of, that's an ethic question.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because along those same lines, you know, with the new Congress coming back into session and all these new people that have been elected, it turns out that ethics training is a significant part of the indoctrination or the training coming into being a new congressperson and the staff that goes along with it. There's ethics. They actually have to take ethics training classes so that they can follow the House rules. But interestingly enough, the only people that don't have to take it are the congressional leaders themselves.
Well, that makes sense, too, because they know they're incapable.
So I'm just wondering.
Nobody
would
pass.
As our leaders do, so do those that watch them, and I think that's kind of what you're seeing. These kids probably have grown up through that era with people like Clinton and a lot of the unethical behavior going on. Why is it wrong?
Yeah, that's what smart people do.
Right.
Right?
Right. That's what our leaders have shown them. So why is it wrong? That's really the question there. So we'll come back after a quick break and finish up with our One Greater Than Solomon segment here on Solomon on Blast. Okay, we're back with Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. One Greater Than Solomon, we typically pinpoint a specific story to talk about with regards to Christians that have overcome the persecution or a conversion in a significant conversion in their life, but in kind of along the lines of the looking back and looking forward, there was a article out of Fox News that says 2014 was the highest level of modern Christian persecution, and the question, worst is yet to come, possibly. And according to the Christian watchdog group Open Doors USA, 2014 is going down as the year with the highest level of persecution of Christians. It said that although North Korea and its brutal imprisonment of Christians tops the list of the 50 countries hostile to the faith, Islamic extremism remains the number one threat. She added that the report from Open Doors says the violence against Christians increased in countries such as Somalia, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, and for the first time, four African nations entered the top 10. Africa is emerging as a hotbed of persecution, and part of that is Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, and other like-minded groups are learning from the success of the Islamic State. One of the CEO of Open Doors says, in other words, the cancer of Christian persecution is metastasizing and it's spreading. They reported that many experts are warning that a more violent strain of Islamic extremism will continue in the year to come. And interestingly enough, they say here, the only way governments can confront it is if they treat the threat of Islamic terrorism the way countries around the world came together against Nazi Germany. So the question is, are we seeing, like I said at the beginning, 2015 being much, much similar to 1915 with regards to the threats that we're facing? And according to this particular research from Open Doors, it is. What's your thoughts, Fred?
Well, I had one different kind of thought on all this, just looking back at the history of persecution against Christianity, going all the way back through the centuries. One of the great persecutions back in the 3rd century was, I believe, the persecution of Diocletian, the era where we remember the Christians being fed to lions and, you know, the Colosseum and all of those types of persecutions. And what happened at the end of that was the conversion of Constantine, you know, in the beginning of the 4th century. Now, whatever you want to think about that, he ended a statewide persecution against Christians within the Roman Empire, and the world fundamentally changed after that. So we know one thing, Doug. All things work together for the good to them that love God and are called according to his purpose. And that is not to minimize what our brothers and sisters in these nations are going through. It's only to say that at the end of it all, God wins, and we need to pray for them. And it's going to be their prayers for deliverance that change the world.
Yeah. And actually, this particular article ends with a statement that says, on the positive side, the Middle East splintered Christian groups have drawn together in a remarkable new unity, especially in Syria. And Muslim leaders opposed to Islamic State have shown more support for Christian minorities. So there is hope, and that hope is in Christ. Until next week, keep thinking wisely. We'll be back next week.